listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Lives and elevating performance is at the heart of everything Shields Health Solutions does as one of the largest integrated specialty pharmacies in the nation. The Shields team dedicates their patient support programs, experiences, and data platforms to help reduce costs, achieve better clinical outcomes, and accelerate system-wide growth. This is the Shields Health Solutions Special Podcast Series.
We're going to be talking about specialty pharmacy treatments which fall in line with the conditions around HIV and how we have had ongoing podcast content about HIV treatment over the years. Shout out to Michelle Sherman, known as the Conscious Health, Conscious Pharmacist and the Conscious Pharmacist podcast. Done a lot of work and research on HIV. This is a treatment and a condition that continues to get updated. And we appreciate the updates from a team of pharmacists that we've been really leveraging and utilizing lately on the Pharmacy Podcast Network. They've helped us put together a four-part series, welcoming back Dr. Jennifer Donovan with Shields Health Solutions. Jen, it's great to have you back.
Hey, Todd, good to be here.
Subject of HIV, and you have brought fellow soldiers with you as part of the Shields Health Solutions team and protecting and advocating for your patients. Introduce us to our guest from Shields Health Solutions.
Yeah, I have the privilege to be here with Adelisa. She's one of our clinical pharmacists and has a tremendous amount of experience and expertise within HIV. Prior to her role at Shields, she's worked in different settings and seen really the continuum of care for these patients. So really excited for her to be here and share what she does with our and for our patients.
Thank you for having me, Jen. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Adelisa, right out, let's dive into a little bit of your background. Why'd you want to become a pharmacist? And what is it about HIV treatment, HIV care that really piques your interest?
Yeah, so I discovered that I wanted to be a pharmacist. It's actually more of a personal reason around growing in Nigeria, actually. In my childhood and seeing how, you know, the lack of quality care affected family members. For example, a lot of them were very much interested in taking their medications the way it was prescribed, but there wasn't really anyone there to guide them around that therapy. And because of that, it caused a lot of issues with their health, you know, complications and around that. So for me, just witnessing that firsthand actually pushed me to take on that interest in pharmacy. And because it puts me close to people that are taking medications and being treated for their conditions and just being present to guide them and, you know, just make sure that it's safe as well as working for them. That actually propelled me to choose this career in pharmacy.
So there were an estimated 39 million people living with HIV at the end of 2022, two-thirds of whom, which would have been 25.6 million, are in the World Health Organization's African region, is the way that they have this map, which you can find more of this information at who.int/newsroom. And they do have a graph there. But I bring that up because I was thinking when I first heard of this in the late 80s, a teenager, but born a child of the 70s, 80s, AIDS was HIV. It was a death sentence. We didn't have the type of treatment that we do today and the expertise that we have today from nurses, from physicians, from obviously our pharmacists. So I want to hear from the both of you. I'm going to start out with Jen about the evolution of HIV care and inpatient treatment and where specialty pharmacy intersects with that.
Yeah, I know. It was definitely a death sentence those many years ago, and such a stigma associated with it that hasn't truly gone away as well. I think it's something that many people living with HIV still deal with. But to your point, there was at a time in the beginning where there was nothing, and we've evolved where there's multiple regimens available. We've also been able to address, you know, resistance and have medications to address that. And these medications are now allowing patients to live longer, healthier lives. And in many instances, folks aren't dying of AIDS, but rather of other chronic conditions. And it's really a tribute to the research and available medications. And I know Adelisa has seen this with our patients. So Adelisa, any thoughts, you know, from your experience?
Yes, I agree. In the past, how HIV was determined to be a death sentence, but it's not the case today. But then it's still that whole mindset still persists in some, you know, populations. And even recently, I did speak with one of our patients that, you know, prior to joining our pharmacy, she was under that impression that, you know, HIV was a death sentence. And for a very long time, she had that diagnosis, but she ignored the diagnosis until she landed in the hospital from, you know, complications of the virus. So I say this because while therapy is different today, we're able to treat patients with HIV so that they can live longer, healthier lives. There still remains that, impression in particular populations that still don't know that they are able to have treatments that work, and that when they take the medications as prescribed, then they are able to live long, healthy lives. And just being in this position as a pharmacist at Shields and coming across patients like that, being able to have that conversation in detail with them to let them know that when they take this medication, that they will get better. It's something that, you know, it just, I'm overwhelmed just knowing that it still persists in some populations as well.
Yeah, Adelisa, it's a good call out, and I recall you sharing this patient story with me a few months ago. And yes, I think what stood out to me was this patient was living and suffering with this condition, and probably had a lot of fear associated with it, so much so that the complications led to a hospital admission. And I think what you really underscored here is the need for continued education. Although we've come such a long way with available treatments, we still haven't penetrated some key groups. And I think, Black and African Americans in particular have a mistrust of healthcare. And I think there's still some work that needs to be done to educate and advocate and get, you know, care that's desperately needed for these groups.
Something that stood out to me as the other conversations as part of this four-part series, which is brought to us by Shields and the whole Health Solutions team, which has been wonderful to be part of this, is your data that you're extracting in order to know and navigate improvements to treatments. And I think this is bigger than Shields. This is other specialty pharmacies. This is health systems. This is payers. 93% average of your patients who reach viral suppression. So you're sustaining and making people be able to live full lives and be able to live with HIV. Talk to us a little bit about the metrics and the feedback that you've received from patients that you've helped, and just shout outs to your team as well about achieving such a high level. That's just amazing.
Yeah, I'll certainly take some of the introductory components. So as you mentioned, you know, the viral load suppression. So just to level set here, we want to be able to suppress or not detect the HIV virus in a patient's blood. And so when it's undetectable, it's a good indicator that the medication is working and able to allow the patient to live a healthier life and also decrease the chance of that person transmitting it to other people. So it's a very positive indicator. And so 93% of our patients have undetectable levels, which is incredible. And when you put this into reference, there's two benchmarks that come into play. One is from the CDC, and the national average, according to the CDC, is about 64-65% of patients reported by the CDC achieve this viral suppression, which is significantly lower than our 93. And then the second benchmark is the Ryan White, which is considered some of the gold standard in clinics, being able to provide treatment and care for patients. And their benchmark is around 90%. So again, we're still, exceeding some of the key benchmarks. And I think that's related to the number and frequency of engagements our patients have with our pharmacist. And I would maybe turn it over to Adelisa to maybe share some of those experiences that really lead to this result.
Yeah, so here at Shields, we spend time with our patients. Initially, when they are introduced to us by our liaisons, we place that call the first time to speak with them. And we try to connect with our patients at a very deep level. We ask them various questions. We understand, HIV, especially with the history, the stigma. Some of our patients are initially not open to having discussions with us, but just based on, our culture of kindness and being able to just have that conversation with them in a non-judgmental way, just to get to know them. Sometimes it's not just about the drug initially. We ask them questions around their perception about their diagnosis, what they think about the therapy, trying to gauge if they're going to take it, if there are any barriers as well. So we're trying to see if, there are things around the social determinants of health, if there's any barrier at all that is going to keep them from taking their medications. So we're having this discussion with them, and we take that time to build that bond with them. And the moment that they open up to even share any challenge at all, and we're able to help them address it, and also follow up frequently with our patients, then they begin to connect with us and even call us if there are any issues at all. And we're constantly monitoring, right? So like Jen mentioned, in terms of the outcomes, so the goal would be that they have undetectable viral load. But in addition to that, we also want their immune system to recuperate. So the CD4 count is something we also check. So in that initial call, we give them these informations based on if they take their medication just like it's prescribed without missing any dose at all, then they will achieve that goal. We talk to them about the possibilities of what they could do when they take their medications. Like, for example, undetectable status means untransmissible, right? So they are aware that if, they finally become undetectable, then the fears around the stigma, which some of them are already going through personally, those things will not hold them back anymore. So just that bond that we create initially and frequently calling them back and checking in on them is what really I feel makes the Shields model different and unique. So for example, is one of our patients, right? She, I remember calling her because she actually requested to speak with a pharmacist because she wanted to find out more information about a medication that she was taking. So I gave her a call, and she told me, she's trying to, she spoke with her nutritionist and they flagged a particular medication to call the pharmacist and see if there's any drug interaction. But in the process, I also saw that in her, we have access to the EMR, right? So we're able to see some of our patients, their labs. I could see that she wasn't quite there in terms of the goals, the outcomes, and she's been on the therapy for a while. So in addition to helping her with the, you know, the drug interaction questions that she was asking about, I did ask her about, like, you know, what she felt about her medication around the HIV therapy, if she was taking it daily. And she opened up to me, you know, telling me about her challenges, you know, with family. She's the primary person taking care of her children. And for the most part, she spends most times just, you know, focusing on them, and she's not really thinking about her own health, right? So we had that conversation, and I expressed understanding to her, and also told her that, you know, discussed with her the importance of being adherent to her medication. But then she also expressed to me about constantly feeling sick. And it was around the time that we were just coming out of the pandemic. So she had tested herself multiple times for COVID, and it always came back negative. And so for her, she thought, if I don't have COVID, I'm okay. But she kept on having these flu-like symptoms. At the time, I could see that her CD4 count was very low. So I asked her if she was taking a particular antibiotic that I saw that a doctor had also prescribed for her in the past. And, you know, she told me that she wasn't, because she just stopped getting the refill. So she assumed that she wasn't on the therapy anymore. So I told her that generally that it was important for her to be on that medication, but I would send a message to the doctor, and we did, and we were able to get the refills for her. My point is that in cases like this, where a patient's CD4 count is low, for example, just being present to see whether the patient is taking antibiotics to prevent any complications or infections that can potentially put them in the hospital is important as well, because we're able to see that. In addition to helping her with her adherence concerns, these were all the things that I was able to do in that instant, and you know, place her on that antibiotic so that she can continue to take it and not become so sick that she ends up in the hospital or, you know, get pneumonia. But eventually, you know, we were able to help her in terms of like her adherence issues. But that constant checking in, that relationship that we have with our patients is what I think makes our model unique.
Jen, I was listening to Adelisa tell the story about one of her patients. It actually might have been her friend, and she was talking about reaching out to a pharmacist or to get help later in the diagnosis, after maybe finding out that, you know, she had HIV. Can you talk to us, because of the average time to therapy is so quick, with as soon as your patient is engaged, you're doing therapy within 1.5 days. So that's extremely fast. But if I back up a bit, what is the time to get tested and you discover you have it to the time that you start therapy? Is there an advantage to getting on medication as quickly as possible in comparison to people who may have waited?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that the faster folks can start their medication, it helps with certainly decreasing their transmission and spread, but also allowing them to feel better. It also allows less complications to develop as well. So starting therapy is really, you know, key first step. And then continuing the therapy is really the ultimate goal. And definitely heard through Adelisa's, you know, patient example, it's those relationships and that trust that needs to be built. And we try to do that at the beginning of therapy to allow, you know, them to start off, you know, believing in the medication and understanding why it's so important to take.
Adelisa, share with us clinical interventions and how specialty pharmacy is so tuned in to a patient's treatment, and actually how they're tracking, how there is any kind of titration from a lower dose to a higher dose. Or I'm not a pharmacist, so I'm not going to be good at asking these questions, but talk to us about the clinical interventions of our specialty pharmacists.
And so I work with a team of clinical pharmacists, amazing group, and we're constantly, providing interventions to our patients. And some of them, because we have that edge in terms of the access to the EMR, we're able to monitor labs, right? So for example, some of the therapies in HIV medicine, particularly those that contain tenofovir, for example, that can potentially cause renal issues. We have had situations where some of our patients are renally impaired, for example, their creatinine clearance are on the low side, and they are started on a particular medication. Initially, they're actually okay in terms of their renal function, but maybe because of other comorbid conditions. I did have a patient that was in that similar case, was taking a particular therapy, and eventually the creatinine clearance became much lower than it should be while on that therapy. And I did send a message to the doctor because the patient continued taking that medication, and we recommended alternative medication. If you want, I can definitely mention the names of the therapy, but we were able to recommend alternative medication that the doctor did accept, and we switched the patient to a different antiretroviral therapy that when a patient is renally impaired can still continue with that. So, that's one of the, many interventions that we have done in the past. So I also remember other drug interactions. For example, patients that have comorbid conditions, HIV and HCV. So HIV and hepatitis C virus co-infections. So some of these medications have a contraindication with hepatitis C therapy. So some of our patients that have, been on a particular medication for HIV, and eventually they are co-infected with hepatitis C, we are able to switch the therapy by sending a message to the provider. For example, Simtuza, which is a protease inhibitor, it has contraindications with Mavyret, for example. So in that case, we've seen situations where a doctor can prescribe Mavyret, and we send a message to the doctor to give them that, talk to them about that contraindication. And depending on the genotype of hepatitis C, Epclusa, for example, might be appropriate. So we give that recommendation for Epclusa. So those are some of the things that we are able to pick up on a day-to-day basis with our patients.
Adelisa, what I loved about these examples that you share that I know our team, deals with on a day-to-day basis is really truly a testament to being integrated into the healthcare system and having access to these critical laboratory values that really influence the patient's care and drug therapy. And then two, also being, integrated and having access to the provider to be able to intervene in real time and change the patient's course of therapy. So whether that's minimizing side effects or renal or kidney complications, and ultimately keeping them on the right path. So those are just, great examples that we do. And I think that's, part of the reasons that we have such great outcomes. So kudos to you and the team. I never get tired of hearing these great, great interventions.
Thank you, Jen.
As we have shared on some of the other episodes, Jen, we were talking about the barrier to treatment that comes into play. Unfortunately, it's just part of the ecosystem of healthcare, and that is the financial barrier. However, $31.9 million was secured for financial assistance through the Shields Care Continuum. Talk to us about the importance of the financial side of treatment.
I know. Isn't that number astounding? It's just so incredible to see that. And it's truly a team effort, specifically starting with our liaisons who are integrated in the clinic. They too have access to the EMR, so they're able to see what the prescriber wants for the patient, able to understand what some of the limitations are, and they're able to complete, whether that's the financial assistant forms or prior auth forms, and they do it in such a expedited time. We get patients on therapy sooner, as you mentioned before, but also decreasing the cost, because even if they do have access, can they afford to take it? And can they afford to take it on a regular basis? And so this is a critical barrier that we address first and foremost to get patients on the right care. So proud of that team as well. And, you know, these patients deserve access, and they're living longer and healthier lives because of it.
Dr. Adelisa Anaka, Dr. Jennifer Donovan, this has been a wonderful podcast opportunity to share with our listeners about advancements in HIV care, HIV treatment, also the importance of specialty pharmacy really being the advocate. It's the hub of healthcare is what pharmacy is, and you are advocates, and you defend the treatment that your patients deserve, and you stand for them. And I'm very impressed with this team and with both of you. And I want to thank you for sharing today.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It was great to be here.
Thank you, Todd. It was great to be here as well. Thank you, Jen.
For more information on Shields Health Solutions, please take a look at shieldshealthsolutions.com. Once again, that's shieldshealthsolutions.com. Connect with these two superstars through LinkedIn. In your show notes, we will have links to LinkedIn profiles. And we always thank you for listening. If there's anything we can ever do for you and helping your pharmacy and or advocacy, as well as PBM issues, our network of over 50 hosts are all ready and standing by to dig into subjects that are most important, and that is advocating for our patients. But we thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. I lay all alone.